September is King Records Month in Cincinnati, and with me in the studio to talk about this year's activities are Christine Anderson from Xavier University's History Department, Sherry Glover-Thompson, who is Henry Glover's daughter, and Darren Blaze, who is co-owner of Shake It Records. Thanks for coming in tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This year's celebration marks the 76th year since Sid Nathan started King Records. One of the topics that we covered is the role of women musicians at King Records. Christine, you've been working on this project for a number of years. How were women involved at King?
Well, that's very interesting because we would ask people and they would say, oh, there might have been a backup singer. And there was Bonnie Lou. So Sue Plummer, who was Xavier's Public History Program AmeriCorps member, looked at Rapelli's discography and found hundreds and hundreds of songs recorded by women at King in all different genres. So that's been a really exciting thing. Sue and I went to D.C. We interviewed two of the Jewels who still live there, and Elaine Armstrong, who is now married, so she's Gwendolyn Chamberlain, who recorded Four Sides at King in 1968. So it's been very exciting, and the Ohio Humanities Council has helped to fund a planning grant for some community conversations on this topic.
So is this research available for researchers?
It sure is. We have a website, Your Music, My Music, Our Music. We have several Facebook pages, so we have quite a bit of stuff there. We'll be adding interviews and songs by contemporary women artists in Cincinnati for the gala at the end of our program on the 27th of September.
And let's talk about some of the events that you have lined up honoring women this month.
We have community conversations September 16th, 17th, and 22nd. The website has the locations. Each one is in a different place, including Herzog Music Resource Center, Xavier University, and then a gala at the end that will also be at Herzog.
And there's going to be a panel discussion at the Downtown Public Library Sunday, September 29th. Darren, tell us about Henry Glover.
Henry was kind of like the secret weapon at King Records. Sid had the idea, but Henry brought it into the real world and made it what it was, from the early manufacturing components and the building of the studio, A&R, production, songwriting. He was kind of a triple threat, really, for everything. And when you look at his spans of his influence, you know, when I think of Henry Glover, the first thing that doesn't come to my mind is like a Wynonie Harris song. The first Henry Glover song that I came in contact with was a cover by a punk rock band from Queens when the Ramones did California Sun. So Henry could write a sultry or produce a sultry soul ballad, or he could write a California sunshine surf hit. And so all that in between he was able to do. And his fingerprints are all over American music, from R&B and hillbilly boogie, pop, surf, Americana, you name it, he's there. It's his DNA that really kind of lays a lot of the groundwork for American music.
And how unusual was it in a record company back in the 50s for an African-American to be so heavily involved in that record company?
I mean, there's a few examples. I mean, maybe one of his few predecessors would be Mayo Williams, who was an A&R man for Paramount and other companies. But nobody could pull the trigger like Henry could. I've always felt that Sid's great talent was knowing what he wasn't able to do and who to hire to do that job. You know, when you go back and you look at, like, the songs that Sid didn't feel were a hit and then became huge hits versus people who knew what a hit was, then, you know, he was able to hire somebody like Henry Glover or Ralph Bass or Jim Wilson or Hal Neely, like these guys that would put his ideas into practice. You know, Sid was this cantankerous guy. You know, Sid burnt the bridges, and then guys like Henry and everybody else kind of rebuilt him again.
But Sid was on the forefront of integration.
Absolutely. Yep, yep. And so people like Henry kind of drove that theme there. And so, you know, part of it was economics. And having talked to some of those musicians, not that early, but earlier on, it really came down to, okay, we're doing an R&B session, but you're a white country guy and you're here. and I know you can play this, so get in there and play it. To me, some of these guys were part-time guys. They were mailmen and everything else. We're not going to wait around till 5 o'clock till he's done with his mail route to make this track. Get in there and do it. So Henry, I think, you know, because of his abilities, I think it opens more avenues to other African-Americans and, you know, guys like Gene Red, Sonny Thompson, who all Sid entrusted. And because of that trust, it became a very successful company.
And Sherry, you're involved in the panel discussion at the Downtown Public Library Sunday, September 29th, titled Sid Nathan and Henry Glover Into the Light. First of all, talk about your father. Tell us about him and your connection to him.
Thank you. I'm his only living daughter. And over the past 7 or 8 years, I took up genealogy because I wanted to learn more about my ancestors on both sides. I had known Henry, my father, as this executive, this larger-than-life person who would come to Cincinnati to work at King Records. And we spent a really good amount of time with him and just doing various children's things, going to the park, going to the movie, eating out, in all of those kinds of activities. And I really formed a bond with him and was very close to him. And when he was not in Cincinnati, he would call frequently. I still remember playing outside. I was around 7 or 8 years old, and my grandmother would come to the back door of the porch, and she would call out, "Your daddy from New York is on the phone." And I thought everybody had two daddies, one who lived in the house and one who lived in New York. So I would stop playing, go in, "How are you doing?" "Doing fine. I miss you. I'm going to come. I'll be there." And that's really my early life with Henry. And after, I think, about teenage years, he wasn't any longer with King Records, and he didn't come to Cincinnati as frequently because, of course, Sid Nathan had died. And even though he came back nominally a couple of years after that, he pretty much stayed in New York. And I had some contact with him, but not a lot. So that's why it was very important for me to get to know these other relatives on his side. And thus my journey began. And it has been one of the most rewarding projects I think I've taken on.
Well, Christine, you're moderating this panel discussion September 29th, which includes Sid's nephew, Steve Halper, as well as Darren and Sherry. What will this panel be discussing?
Well, I think the panel, which is at 1:30 on the 29th at the public library, will look at Henry and Sid together. Although they appear to be very different folks and had different talents, there was a real symbiosis between them. And as Darren said, you can't turn around and not see King every time you look at something in late 20th century music. Their collaboration is part of public popular culture. And Steve knows a lot about that, so Steve and Sherry can compliment that. And Steve right now is chairman of the board of the King Studios nonprofit. You know, we have a lot of folks interested in King right now. So we're hoping people will come and ask their questions, and we can look at this collaboration and the range of genres that Sid and Henry, I feel almost irreverent talking about them using their first names, were able to collaborate on, and the ways that those intersected because of their abilities to see new possibilities, and the way that an urban context made that possible, that you wouldn't have brought these folks together had it not been for the Great Migration, you know. I look at the Purple People Bridge, which was, in fact, the L&N Railroad Bridge that the Pan American Line came across. So when you think about Pan American Boogie, that the Delmore brothers did, that bridge brought all these folks, African American and white, from the South to Cincinnati, to King Records, to work together.
And there's also an exhibit called It's Star Time at Motor Pub that's running this month with 10 local artists. Tell us about that.
Well, Chris Shadler has collected these terrific images that are sort of filters of various King artists, and I know I came into his office one day and he pulled out his phone and showed me one of them. So I think that that's going to be really terrific for folks to come in to Motor and take their time looking at all these terrific interpretations of the artists at King.
And one question that might come up at the panel discussion is about the King building status. What's going on with that building?
I think there's a lot of discussion and excitement about the building, but I don't think plans have been made for the future. I know that we're applying for a national historic marker, and all of the various groups are working together on that, but I'm not sure that anyone's made a decision yet about what direction the building will go.
Has the roof been repaired at least?
The roof has been repaired. There's still a couple of water questions with the building. And my secret private hope is that we can turn our Ohio Humanities planning grant into something bigger for youth in Evanston. Evanston Community Council has been very involved in King. And can we turn this into a youth docent program using King as a resource and sort of a focal point for our youth that are so much part of Evanston and Xavier and King?
Thank you all for coming in tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I've been in conversation with Sherry Glover Thompson, daughter of Henry Glover, who was an important part of King Records, Christine Anderson from the History Department of Xavier University, and Darren Blaze from Shake It Records. You'll find a link to King Records and this month's celebration at wbxu.org. I'm Lee Hay. Well, they got a new dance and it go like this.